Just a couple minutes late, so it's 7:04 and we'll call the meeting to order. Like I just noted before, we are holding this meeting under the State of Illinois State of Emergency in response to COVID-19 pandemic and in accordance with the adjusted Illinois Open Meetings Act rules. And because of that, the only change from normal that we'll observe tonight is that all the votes will be by roll call. So I'll call everybody's name when we vote on minutes in the adjournment as well. So getting started then with the roll call for attendance to call the meeting to order. Chairman Franek?
Here.
Commissioner Pritz?
Here.
Commissioner Forehand?
Here.
Commissioner Graham-White?
Here.
Commissioner Prestis?
Here.
Commissioner Sager?
Here.
And Commissioner Reno Ogden is absent. Also present, Assistant to the Village Administrator John Pape and Sustainability Commission Commissioner Eric Simon as our special guest this evening. So there's no public present, so we don't have any public testimony. And moving on to the approval of meeting minutes.
Before we get to the approval of meeting minutes, I'd like to formally welcome Jan Sager to being officially a commissioner rather than a nearly interested member of the public. She's finally stepped up, as it were, and we welcome her most heartily.
Congratulations, Jan.
Yeah, welcome.
Congratulations, Jan. Welcome, yeah. Yeah, nice to finally have trapped you.
Yeah, you're close to the truth there, Mike.
Yeah, I believe it.
We'll have to wait to teach her the official commission handshake until later.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Approval of meeting minutes. Are there any comments?
No.
None here.
None here.
I got a couple in the second paragraph of section 4. At the end of the second line, actually at the beginning of section 4, paragraph 2, commission agreed that the garage would be the first preference to locate panels, or I think it should insert John East, elevation being next.
Got that change.
This was done in an effort to keep them off the west, and I would insert parentheses around the words front elevation.
Sure.
Continuing in north, and I would insert parentheses around the words secondary front. But that kind of explains to people who weren't there what we're talking about.
Can do.
Other than that, I have no other comments. Any other comments from any other commissioners?
No.
Do
I hear a motion to approve?
So moved.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
John, could you please call the roll?
Commissioner Franek?
Yes.
Commissioner Pritz?
Yes.
Commissioner Forehand?
Yes.
Commissioner Graham-White?
Yes.
Commissioner Prestis?
Yes.
Commissioner Sager?
Yes.
Thank you.
Next item, procedures regarding solar panels. On May 20th, John and I participated with Eric Palm, John Anderson from Public Works, David Reno Ogden from the Commission, and Eric Simon from the Sustainability Commission on an online discussion about solar panels and historic properties. With that, I'll let John explain sort of a synopsis of what was discussed and how we got to be where we are tonight.
Yeah, thanks, Chairman Franek. And Commissioner Simon, thanks so much for joining us tonight. We appreciate you continuing to engage in this discussion with us. We had a great call with that group to kind of talk through a couple of the issues about solar panels and historic properties. Generally, just two slightly competing values as the HPC looks to do as much as it can to preserve historic structures the way that they are today, and the Sustainability Commission obviously looking to further its initiatives by increase the use of solar panels and make sure that it's easy for residents to go through the permitting process for solar panels. So that call was regards to one of the applications that was reviewed by the subcommittee over our break, if you will, here since February 12th, which was an application at 8011 Oak for solar panels. And it was a situation where the homeowner just really couldn't do anything to place them elsewhere on their property that would make sense and be, would work well as solar panels in any other location. So ultimately that COA was withheld because it just wouldn't have been historically or architecturally appropriate. And that decision was made by Commissioner Forehand and Commissioner Raina Ogden. And that led to another conversation with the homeowner and the Sustainability Commission and the HPC about kind of a crossroads that homeowner was meeting, in the sense that they, that homeowner wants to continue to be a significant property. They value being a significant property, but also wants to take advantage of solar energy. And so I had some conversations with that homeowner. I know that Commissioner Simon did as well, just about what the COA process means and how it gets carried out. And so I think tonight there's kind of two conversations that we can think about and have. One of them is about the COA process, which is really a process that the HPC utilizes and was put in place to track changes to historical significant properties since they were put on that list in 2013, and kind of tell a story about any exterior changes that are made in a way to then make determinations down the line whether or not that significant property is going to continue to be a significant property whenever the next list is written. In addition to that, though, it doesn't mean that any withholding of a COA would automatically disqualify it or not. And so there's a little bit of, case-by-case determination on whether or not the withholding of the COA would inhibit the property from continuing to be significant. Additionally, the other part of the conversation was how we process solar panels. And since they're not called out specifically, and to be honest, when the ordinance was written, in the current HPC ordinance was written in 2011 and then revised in 2017, the village didn't even have, solar permit applications like it does today. That process is fairly new and really put in place to expedite these types of applications. So one of the suggestions that Commissioner Raina Ogden, Chairman Franek, and Commissioner Simon came together on that I bring back to the commission today is to move solar panels into the same category as windows for review under the ordinance, which would allow them to automatically be reviewed by the subcommittee and be turned around in 7 days, rather than where they would currently fall, which is to the commission within 30 days. And then if the commission doesn't meet within 30 days, they can be reviewed by the subcommittee instead. And so really just a way to kind of put them on the fast track to make sure that we're getting these applications turned around quickly, which is another goal of the Sustainability Commission to do that. And not that I think that we'd get to a default recommendation on solar panels, but I do think that we'll kind of fall into somewhat of a pattern of preferencing locating them on a garage or a back or secondary frontage rather than the front, things like that. And to the extent that they're going to greatly inhibit the front elevation of the home, withholding the COA and then obviously dealing with the issue I discussed first. So Chairman Franek, I don't know where else you want to color that synopsis in, but I'll turn it back to you.
I appreciate that, John. One of the things that we have discussed is, given the fact that solar panels may become increasingly more prevalent, certainly in the village, as well as potentially on historically significant properties, we thought it was best to have an overarching discussion and a consensus and a feeling and a position taken by the commission rather than just determine that we felt it could be viewed and examined by the subcommittee. Now, that recommendation, whatever we decide, could be anything as simplistic as what the fact that we're generally in favor, however we prefer them to be on a garage or on a non-frontage facade, as well as the fact that we need to view them all on a case-by-case basis, obviously, as we would with anything else. So the only other thing that I would add, and my question for you, John, did you send to the commission the so-called solar panel skin that David Reno Ogden had sent out earlier today?
I have not yet. I did share that with you, Chairman Franek, okay. But I did not send it to the commission. I certainly can. Just in description, it was just a new product. I think one of Commissioner Reno Ogden's points in our conversation with Commissioner Simon about a month ago, and his point on solar panels for many years now as we've discussed them, is the fact that he certainly agrees that they are going to continue to be prevalent. We're just going to have more of these applications. It's something that will continue to increase in popularity, but it's been his opinion that he thinks that solar panels will evolve in their aesthetic nature, and become less intrusive to the appearance of the home. One of the products he sent today was a solar skin. That's really much I know about it, but more of a low-profile mat that goes across the roof to potentially be less intrusive, and I'm happy to share that with this group.
Yeah, it's advertised as being something that was designed by several engineers at MIT, and it's essentially an aesthetic skin on top of the standard solar panel that has minimal, if any, impact upon the functionality of the solar panel. It's designed to make panels less obtrusive. I guess the standard comment that that I made and we heard during our conversation in May was that the solar technology will continue to evolve, and as such, panels will very much differ in terms of size and number and potentially configuration. So it's something that hopefully we can take advantage of in the future. And with that, I open it up to the general conversation of the commission members as to what their thoughts are.
Maybe Commissioner Simon, if you wanted to start us off and just talk a little bit about, your background, sustainability, and
stability. I apologize, Eric.
No worries. Hey, just thanks everybody for having me. I really, really appreciate that. And the conversation a month ago with Chairman Franek and John and the rest of the gang was super helpful, and I thought very productive. My kind of specialty on the Sustainability Commission is energy. And, really that's solar. So can I just provide a little bit of context to both what John and Chairman Franek said? Because that was very well kind of summarized. One thing is that as it pertains to changing the process to be speedier, to kind of fit into your 7-day process versus your 30 potentially plus day process, dovetails really nicely with SoulSmart. So the Village of River Forest got our SoulSmart designation last year. SoulSmart is a program of the Department of Energy. It's through NREL, the National Renewable Energy Laboratory. And if you pass it, what you've done is you've made a lot of the barriers for your residents to get solar easier. And so that change would really dovetail well with solar right now, with SoulSmart, excuse me. Right now we have a bronze designation and we're currently going for our silver designation in that. If we can remove even more barriers for the residents, that's great. Just one other piece of context, and then I'll be quiet and happy to answer questions, is that the amount of kilowatt hours of solar in River Forest has doubled in the last 14 months. And that pace is going to continue regionally. River Forest, and we talked about this when we had our conversation in May, River Forest is a little bit tough to do solar in because we have a lot of old structures, we have old roofs, and we have a lot of shading. And you know, that's unfortunate, but it is what it is. It's actually why we love River Forest, because of the homes and all our trees. But it also makes us a little bit more complex because the choices that residents have on where to put solar on their homes is very limited. But I would say that we're pretty much aligned, unless you disagree with that, Chairman Franek, you know, with the fact that, you know, Sustainability Commission wants to make it as easy as possible for people to have, you know, sustainable homes. And we think that's great, by the way, for preservation of historical structures. And we are residents here, and we want to see historical structures maintained as much as possible, and you know, give your commission you know, even more ability to do that. So I think we're definitely not at odds. We're just kind of trying to find you know, opportunities where we can be even more effective for the residents.
Yeah, Eric, I'd interject that there's probably no more energy efficient and keeping things out of landfills and restoring homes as opposed to tearing them down.
Absolutely.
There are certainly studies have been that the payback from an increased level of efficiency because of things like insulation and other different kinds of window glazing, payback doesn't occur until decades after those events occur. So that doing something to preserve things in place is certainly, I think, a program both our commissions could get behind.
Absolutely.
I do have one question for you, though. Could you describe the SolSmart program and what the individual benefits would be to a homeowner who wished to participate?
There's really two kind of main tenets of the SolSmart program. It was a year program that we went through, and it's a points-based system where, you know, if we achieve a certain amount of points, in other words, have, you know, achieved certain objectives, then we get certified. But the two main things are trying to keep the fees to do solar on a residential structure down. So that would be application fees, that would be permit fees and things like that. We're actually in good shape in River Forest with that. We have it around $100, I think, John. I don't know if you know offhand, but we did a good job doing that. Of the like 40 or 50 other things we did, a lot of those are just around trying to remove red tape and speed up the process. So for example, when someone files a permit to do solar with the village turns that around in 7 days when in the past that was longer. So, you know, it's kind of speed to market, and it's making it as easy and economical as possible for residents. That's oversimplifying, but that's kind of the general gist of it.
Thanks.
The one last thing I'll
Eric.
Go ahead, Commissioner Briss.
Eric, what are the configurations that are commonly going in place look like? Are they just solar panels with like 120 volt feed into the house? Do they put in battery systems to collect solar and then use it, you know, when they might not have as much, you know, sun? Are they typically doing the whole roof, partial roofs? I mean, can you characterize kind of what a typical solar installation in River Forest looks like?
Yeah, of course, Commissioner Britt. So, you know, maybe I'll take a quick step back on kind of what the purchase process is for a resident. So when they bring a company that does solar installations, and when they call them, the first thing they do is what's called a helioscope, which is it's a piece of software that every solar company in the world really has, where you enter kind of all the different data points of the home, like, you know, how much energy it uses, as well as the physical attributes. It uses Google Earth and other GIS tools basically to map the roof And actually a cool website that I would recommend you check out on that, you know, that the commissioners check out in your free time is called the Google Sunroof, which is a website where you basically put in your address and it actually very accurately shows if you can produce solar on your roof and if so, how. It takes under consideration shading, takes under consideration weather as the main two things, and of course uses real-time mapping. So there's a process that is pretty accurate, and that software generally spits out where on your roof you could generate solar electricity and how much you would need in order to achieve whatever objective you're trying to achieve. Generally, that's going to be on the south and west facing roofs. The south roof being, you know, where the majority of solar panels is usually located on a home or a business. The kind of the installation is relatively easy these days. It's about a one day process. Residential homes would have one inverter. So all the solar panels generally have optimizers on them. Optimizer is just a device on each module that, you know, by name, literally optimizes it. It monitors it. It reports if there's any errors. And then it takes that DC electricity that's generated into a single line down to an inverter, which can be located really anywhere, as long as it's relatively near the wherever the power, you know, wherever the panel is for the house. But that doesn't have to be on the roof. That usually you can hide somewhere, which I think is important for historical structures too. The inverter converts the DC to AC. There's a loss in that of about 20%+, which is something that's being improved greatly year over year on that efficiency. And then it essentially goes right into your panel. So it directly feeds the house. You mentioned storage. Storage is becoming more and more pervasive, but it's very expensive still. So like in River Forest, there's nobody has storage. I love to have storage on my house because it's an amazing concept, because obviously the sun is only out during the day, yet you're consuming electricity throughout the evening too. Or as we know in Chicago, the sun's not always out. So storage is a wonderful thing, but it's very expensive. One Tesla Powerwall is like $10,000 or $12,000. So the price of that's
going to... How does that compare against the cost of the panels and the inverter and all the installation? You know, I mean, what's the scope of the cost?
Yeah, I forget what the per kilowatt hour cost is, but like in the last five or six permits that have come through the village, the cost of those systems is between, you know, I'd say $10,000 and $22,000, depending on the size of the system. Now, and I won't bore you guys with, you know, I could talk solar all day, which I'll spare you, but Illinois is very special right now in that in 2016, we passed the FEJA, which is the Future Energies Job Act. And what that did was basically start this, you know, huge rush for renewable energies, because it basically negotiated with all of our utilities to fund a big pot of money that subsidizes solar installation. So the whole reason that River Forest just in the last couple of years has gone from two or three installations to about 25 installations is because the return on investment is ridiculous right now. It's basically 3 or 4 years on a 25-year system. So the economics have really changed.
So most people are using solar then. I mean, you know, a lot of people are at work during the day, and I know that's not right now with COVID, but most people are using this then, I guess, during daylight hours to offset their energy costs, right? And then they just revert back to the grid, depending on the time of year, earlier or later. But when the sun starts to go down, you lose a lot of efficiency, right? It's best when you're in direct sunlight, right? On twilight, you're not going to be generating a lot of power, right?
That's correct. And when the sun's very low in the sky in December, you're also not going to be generating a lot of power as well. Most homes in River Forest that have solar arrays right now are not generating 100% of their energy needs. So, you know, and it varies greatly. Like in my house, I'm generating around 75%, and I put as many modules as I could on the roof, but it's just, you know, you have so many days of sunshine in this.
Yeah,
park.
Yeah.
So it's tough.
Thanks, Eric.
Yeah, of course.
If I can maybe jump back into with just a couple more points that have come to mind. So one, I think generally, you know, the commission is talked previously about investing in properties, and historical properties that get invested in are the ones that don't become teardown candidates because they hold value, and the valuable houses are not typically the teardown candidates, right? Most of the ones that we've seen be teardown have seen some form of blight or lack of investments. Generally, I think that's the positive of residents investing in their homes with solar panels is another spot where they're continuing to invest in their properties. If I could too, just mention kind of the two things I bring to you with maybe a little more clarity than I did the first time. Item one is Chairman Franek and Commissioner Raina Ogden, I think they're bringing a recommendation that the commission consider to move the solar panels into the 7-day time frame, the same as windows. And if the direction of the commission tonight is that, you know, the general consensus of the commission is that we're comfortable with that, then I'll go through the procedures of drafting up the ordinance change. You guys will sign off on that, and then that would go to the village board for sign off and be codified with the ordinance. Number two is probably a little bit more gray and more of a policy type of decision for the commission to consider is whether or not we want to direct homeowners that a COA withholding for solar panels may or would not inhibit their ability to continue to be considered a significant property in the future. And the reason I say that is because in the case of this property and in the case of other ones that may come up, I have to tell the homeowner what the COA process is for and what it's in place for, but tell them, you know, I can't give you a decision on whether or not you putting up these solar panels is going to inhibit you from continuing to be a significant property. The commission can discuss that and decide that it's not something they want to touch, or it is some surety they want to provide people because you think it's important that we encourage solar panels, or we want to hear them on a case-by-case basis, things of that nature. But those are kind of the two issues. The one would be the direction on the 7-day time frame, whether or not we're comfortable moving that direction, and then two would be how to treat COAs like this in the future.
John, maybe I missed something, but I didn't understand that if you made a significant change without getting a COA, that could result in the loss of your status. I didn't know that.
I can provide some clarity around that. And I think really the process of COAs and the issuing withholding of COAs is to paint a picture on what changes have happened on that property with or without approval. Now, you might ask, what does it matter if I have or have it? Well, the whole purpose is that at some, in, you know, undetermined time, but at some time when the HPC were to make an update or rewrite the significant property list, the HPC would consider, among other factors that you so choose, COAs that have been withheld, work that's been done without C of A's, right? So, again, though, the list is you know, at the board, the common phrase is what the board giveth, they can taketh away. The list is the HPC's to control, and you can make decisions as you want on it.
Can you conflate those two separate points? In other words, can you say that at the time that a COA is granted or withheld, a decision would be made to whether or not, like let's say the COA is withheld and you move ahead anyway, then it would be, we would say, we're not going to grant the COA, and if you move ahead, you'll lose your status. In other words, can we do that in that kind of a process? And that would give the homeowner certainty right there.
I think the commission did that maybe 4 or 5 years ago with a property. It's a little Spanish style home on Lathrop, Lathrop just north of Lake, and they were going to do exterior work, which the commission did not approve. And at that meeting, I think the commission voted to withdraw the significant status.
Yeah, so I remember that too, Commissioner Graham White. It's not my memory that the commission voted on it. I do remember having that conversation.
I remember voting on it.
And I can certainly look that up. You could be right there.
And they never did go ahead and do the work.
Right. And I think those changes that I remember were more obvious that it might, discontinue their eligibility as a significant property. I think that solar panels may be a little bit more nuanced.
Yeah. Well,
If somebody puts a second story on a one-story house, we know how that's going to go for them, right? As far as their continued status as a significant property.
The commission can do that. I don't think there's any reason the commission couldn't do that. Although I really do feel that the solar panels should be encouraged. Is it possible to draw up like an informational sheet on solar panels and what the commission feels would be, should be done in order to keep the property with its historic status? I mean, because right now there are no guidelines, some kind of guidelines that, the homeowner could be given, not even when they apply for that permit, but just to maybe just send out or, in the village email say this is available for anybody to look at. And I would say not just for those on the significant list, but for any historic, any of the structures in the historic district or, older homes to make them, to keep them with their historic character.
Yeah. I mean, I obviously, if there's ideas for a flyer like that, we could certainly explore it. I think that the general consensus is the fact that there is the preference of, right, I think the HPC's preference would be to locate panels as inconspicuously as possible. But I think that that is generally any homeowner's preference to locate them as inconspicuously as possible. And as Commissioner Simon, I think, kind of brought to light, in most occasions, homeowners aren't going to have a whole lot of choice about where they go. They're going to be they're going to be pinned by where they can get the right exposure for the panels.
Right. The idea of having an aesthetic skin that goes over it, which I'd actually heard about a few months ago because there was a big kerfuffle I read in the Washington Post on permits being denied historic row houses there to put solar panels on, although they were said that they could, possibly use the aesthetic skin, which the homeowner objected to because it was going to add, $1,500 or $1,700 to the cost. So, something like that so that people understand there are ways of, making the best of what may not be aesthetically the most, most pleasing thing you can put off. And I also want to say that I live in a house which was built in 1908 and had cedar shakes. And nobody says you have to put cedar shakes or something that looks like cedar shakes on your roofs today. Although that I know would be more pleasing aesthetically. So, I mean, as times change, I think there are things that, we need to, permit and go with.
Can I weigh in? I just have a little bit of a, I seem to have a little bit of a different perspective, though maybe I'm just not absorbing. One, It's not clear to me why we, as the HPC, would take it upon ourselves to formulate and articulate any position at all with respect to whether solar panels are good or bad or should or shouldn't be encouraged. It's fantastic that folks have views on it, and I think reasonable minds can differ, but it certainly doesn't seem within the HPC's purview to encourage or discourage solar panels, except, you know, asterisks, if anything, I would think they pose an issue. I mean, obviously no home has ever lost its preserved historic status due to a failure to install a bunch of solar panels. And so although it may be that we don't have a problem with them, some of us, you know, from a historic preservation perspective, and we even see ways to sort of meld the goal of historic preservation with environmental and technological imperatives of the 21st century, the reality is, if anything, I would think the thumb would be on the scale against, from a historic preservation perspective, and without for a second trying to weigh in on some broader concept about the nature of the good life or anything like that, you know, just focus very myopically on historic preservation.
So fine, I agree with what you're saying. I don't think we should have opinion on this from a perspective of generally installing or not installing. But we do know, like based on the experience with 755 William, that the position of the panels impacts our opinion a lot about doing the work, right? As soon as she moved those to the, she moved into the southern exposure. And I don't know how many of you have walked past the house. It's fantastic. I mean, you have to look for those panels. And you know, we all know that then she installed them on the garage as well, right? It was beautiful, right? So, I want to take and circle that back to what John said. I think had, like with 755 Williams, she installed them on the western exposure, which would have faced the street, we would have all looked at that. And John, I understand your point, but when you're changing the roofs are, I think, a big part of the aesthetic of a lot of these historic homes. I mean, you've got these beautiful concrete tiles or whatever is there, or even the shakes, like Carla was just talking about. And if you're going to impair the aesthetic, I think we can, I don't know why we wouldn't be able to make that call. This, the person who brought the application in and said, will this take my historic status away? I think we could do a pretty good job of saying that's really going to change the look of the house or not enough to give us a concern and a grip for something to vote on. I think we should, I don't see any reason why we can't conflate your two questions and say, yeah, we'll do this within a short window. And we'll give you an opinion about whether or not that's going to impact your historic status. You know, Carla, your information would get out there if she, you know, if the 755 William had decided to put them on the western exposure, we might have had strong opinions about saying, I'm sorry, that's going to take your status away. But go ahead, you know, we're going to say no to the COA, but, you know, but once you do it, you know, we're probably going to remove your status. And I don't see why we can't just have that conversation at once. I want to emphasize one other thing. I think this is a short-term, relatively speaking, problem. What we haven't discussed is besides these aesthetic covers for these solar panels, there are, you know, conversations happening about solar tiles for roofs that look like what is on a lot of the roofs you're going to see in Oak Park. And so, you know, and Tesla is one of the big companies pushing those. So, you know, they do have a history of kind of being successful at these sorts of things. So at new technologies. So I don't know why we wouldn't just embrace this, let them come in and tell us what they want to do, listen to it, give them an opinion about what we think the impact is going to be on the aesthetic of the house, and then let the cards fall where they may. To your point, Brian, we're not encouraging it or discouraging it. We're saying, and we can even help them with the ideas. Move them to the south side. Oh, I didn't think of that. Let me talk to my installer and ask why we didn't do that, right? Maybe I can trim back some trees and make that more effective, you know, now that I'm hearing the concern. I don't see why we just don't embrace the issues and just take care of them and in a discussion with the homeowner when they bring them in to make the change.
I agree. And I don't know whether the 7-day turnaround is a problem. Certainly we've had problems with windows and 7-day turnaround doesn't seem to present, you know, a great problem, and it can always be brought to the full commission, can't it? If it seems necessary.
Yeah, I think, you know what, that's a really good point, Carla. Maybe 7 days is too short if we're going to make that kind of call. Have them come to the next meeting and, you know, and take care of it in that meeting. I mean, you know, they make their application. We have a chance to review it. We can discuss it with the homeowner. We may give them some ideas. Why rush to the 7 days? I mean, you know, especially since their status can be on the line. Just let them go through the regular process, but we'll give them an opinion. I mean, Eric, I don't know if that, I don't know if you consider that unfriendly, Eric. I hope not. You know.
To that end, I really think what saying the 7 days like Windows says is that the commission is comfortable with the subcommittee making the decision on their behalf, you know, as the subcommittee, the two architects on the commission making that decision and giving that advice. To comment on that, I think that it is less about the HPC taking a position on solar panels and more about the HPC trying to do what it, you know, is reasonably comfortable with to advance the goals of another village commission. You know, I think to that end, it may make sense. Brian, I think you, I'm sorry, Michael, I think you bring an interesting idea forward too, that maybe we don't require there to be a decision on the future significance of that home, but in situations where the applicant would like the commission to render an opinion, the commission says that they're welcome to, you know, come forward and ask that question. Obviously, that decision would not be by subcommittee within 7 days. That decision would be by the full commission at their next regularly scheduled meeting, something along those lines.
I think I might be in a slightly different place, and I'm probably being confusing because it's evolving as we're kind of talking it through. But I think that given that the historical status, I consider adding solar panels a potential significant change to the aesthetic of the house that's not like windows. I just don't. I mean, if solar panels are done poorly, they are going to stick out like a sore thumb. Now, I have an Airstream trailer with 180 watts of solar panel and a 270 watt portable kit, and I think they're beautiful. I'm an engineer, and I think they're gorgeous. But a lot of but they really would be a huge change in the aesthetic of the house. And so I'm saying that I wouldn't do it in the 7 days. I would do it in the next meeting, which is on average going to be 15 days away. So it's more than the week, but it's on average 15 days. And we don't wait for the homeowner to ask us if we think it's going to impact the aesthetic. We just bring it up and we just flat out say, this may remove your historical status, just a warning, you know, or if it's really egregious, we'll say, if you do it, we're going to remove your historical status. And if they do it in a way on the southern exposure and they're not on a southern corner, and we all look at it and say, it's beautiful, like 755 William was, then we don't have to bring it up because it's unlikely to impact it down the road. So I think I don't think 7 days is necessary. Because of the potential impact of what this could be. And I don't know that I want to leave an issue as important as potentially changing the historic status of the house. I mean, I'd be irritated if I walked into the next meeting and the subcommittee had done, you know, some approvals and we're all looking at them saying, these are horrible and we're going to have to take their historic status away, and we weren't involved in that decision to okay it.
John Forehand and or Jan Sager, thoughts?
Yeah, I'll hop in. Coming from the architecture side, Michael, I appreciate what you're saying. When we did the one the other month where we, you know, we pushed back on it because it was, you know, yeah. It was on the front elevation. you know, it felt a little awkward, to be honest. So in some cases, it's nice to have the whole committee, you know, backing us up. That being said, I'm a huge advocate of solar panels. I put them on lots of homes I work on. But I agree with what Brian and Michael are saying, in that is our committee, we really don't need to put we don't have to make it a point. You know, we're here for the historical look of these homes. So in terms of the 7 days, you know, again, if it is only 15, you know, on average 15 days to the meetings, I think that's reasonable. That's where I'm coming around. And I agree with you, Michael. I've changed my mind during the course of this talk. And Eric, yeah. I tell you, I don't want to come off as being anti-sustainability in the least bit, but you know, we are charged with keeping the aesthetics of these homes sacred. Now, the other thing is, you know, when you talk about these panels, you can take them off, right? We can return them to the house to its original look. But you're absolutely right. And the William property was a huge example. I think if we actually drove by there the other day with my son and I said, hey, we kept them off the front of that house. And yeah. It made a huge difference. It really did. Now, the homeowner may have come to that themselves, but you know, I think we did a good job on that one. And, you know, that's where I'm standing right now, though.
Informationally, by the way, for those commissioners who weren't part of the commission at the time the discussion was held, the structure that Carla was talking about was a very small Spanish style cottage, and the homeowners were presenting us with one of their thoughts, which was to substantially change the entire character of the property. And I think that, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that is the only instance where someone came in with a request or a COA where we felt so concerned about the potential impact upon the essential nature of why the property was, to our understanding, on the significant properties list, that we said, you know, do you realize that if in fact you do this, you will destroy the reason why the property is on the significant properties list? I think they took it to heart and moved on, ultimately sold the property, I believe, to someone else who decided to maintain it as it is and was.
Yeah, I don't remember any other properties that presented that kind of problem, that issue.
So if I may, Commission, so this is an awesome conversation, and by the way, like, none of this at all is insulting to the Sustainability Commission, because thank God you guys are around. So, you know what, we've seen some really good, in doing research about this, we've seen some, basically what I feel like this commission is saying, we've seen that memorialized in the codes, and Oak Park is a great example, where what I think I don't want to lose perspective on is we are talking about a very small subset of permits on historical homes, right? That would essentially be on the front of the house. So if you look at Oak Park, Evanston, as well as, you know, many other communities throughout the country, their codes are that if it is on the side, back, or garage of the house, there is an immediate approval without any review. In most communities, they present a lot of information on how that homeowner should do their absolute best to minimize, in that case, to minimize the impact to sight lines. Like Oak Park has a guide on doing matte panels versus glossy panels. And as everyone's talked on this call, the technology is constantly evolving to our collective favor. If it is on the front of the house, is the only time, the historical preservation committee in Oak Park gets involved. And that is the same thing we've seen in other communities as well. So, you know, if I agree, if it's on the front of the house, you know, it absolutely, like, now you're talking about, you know, the view that every person's going to have of that historical structure, it'd be the most seen thing and it is the most potentially problematic. It would be wonderful from a sustainability commission standpoint if we could, instead of treating everything the same, if we could potentially separate the problems and then come up with a way to efficiently deal with ones that are not problems, if that's possible.
To that end, I just want to jump in and say to some extent, we do have that just naturally as part of the review process. So the things that the commission reviews for C of A are windows visible from the street, changes to 20% of the facade visible from the street, and demolition. So to that end, if somebody was putting solar panels that were not changing 20% of the facade visible from the street, one example that comes to mind is the women's club, separate situation, but similar things where you can't view those ones from the street, at least not much at all of them, then that would not be reviewed by this commission. It wouldn't be subject to the HPC C of A process, just the normal permit process for any other thing. So there could be some examples where it could be the side of the house and it is visible from the street and it does add up to be more than 20%, but many others may not.
I think the commission has always taken the position through the guidance of the village attorney that our jurisdiction is over any change to more than 20% of a side or facade which is visible from a public street. So that would include the side of a home if it was visible from a public street, or the rear of a home if it's visible from a public street. And I would oppose the concept of treating solar any differently than that, saying that our jurisdiction would be only limited to the front of a home. I think that would be very much against and would be treating solar in a completely different class than we do anything else, such as windows.
Yes, understood, Dave. And I just right. I'm just trying to say there could be scenarios like the ones that I think, you know, as Commissioner Simon points out, Oak Park's trying to get to, that if these ones aren't visible from the street, they're automatic approvals, and it'd be the same case under our current ordinance now. Somebody presented something that's on the back elevation of a house, you know, can't see it from the street, not going to be part of this process anyhow.
But So John, if 755 William had just originally planned to put them on the south side of the roof and on the back side of the garage, they never would have had to request the COA?
So if it was just the back side of the garage, no, because it's a new garage after it was demolished, so the garage is not a significant property. We've talked about that a bit. But
the south side
of the house would still trigger review because it's visible from the street. It's 755 William just happens to be a corner lot that's far enough away from the house next to it that you can see it. But think of a different house in the middle of that 700 block of William, where they might suggest solar panels on the south side of their property. It probably wouldn't be. In fact, for example, many of those houses on the 700 block of William have additions off the back of them that are not reviewed because they're tied enough together and it's in the back of the property. It's just not visible from the street, certainly not 20% visible from the street of the facade. So, there's I think what Dave's getting to, there's unique lots in this town. There's plenty of lots where properties only have front and secondary frontages, have no true back or side, zoning-wise.
As a corner lot, 755 William, all of the both front, back, and both sides would be subject to a COA simply because they're all visible from public streets.
Well, I don't know if we're at this point yet, but I would move that the way we handle this, and tell me, John, if this needs to be framed differently. Any requests for the installation of solar panels will be handled at the next scheduled meeting, assuming that it meets the requirements that it requires COA. And at that meeting, a decision would be made, including potentially, informing the homeowner as to whether or not the installation, of the solar system would impact their significant property status.
Yeah, I think to that
that's end, all I recommend we take care of it.
Yeah, to that end, Michael, there would need to be no change. That's how the ordinance currently reads for the review process. And then as far as the commission making a determination on how it wants to advise on the significant status, I don't think that requires a change. Obviously, like you noted earlier, if you wanted to go to the extent that the commission would move to remove the significant status, we'd make that motion and you'd vote on it the next meeting.
Okay.
Jan, thoughts?
I'm comfortable with that.
Okay.
Again, there's no vote here. There's no vote proposed on the agenda. It's just for discussion and direction to staff.
Jan Sager, do you have any thoughts?
No. I'm in agreement with all of the discussion. Yeah.
So Jan, now that you're a commissioner, you don't jump in as much.
Listen.
For God's sake, Jan, you've been interviewing for the last 2 years.
The motor mouth.
No, not at all.
See, Jan now recognizes that the concept of tag you're in may apply.
Yeah. Yeah. Now you get shy.
As I understand it, the ordinance, we follow the ordinance the same way we always have. And then,
I also think
that makes sense to me.
Yeah,
if we get into a, if we start seeing a lot of homes, significant properties, I mean, how many homes are we talking about anyway?
More and more.
But are there significant properties? I agree.
Just
leave the ordinance as is.
Yeah.
Not so, try to change with the 7 day.
So, thank you guys for hearing this out. Really appreciate it. Again, huge amount of respect for what you guys do to try to keep River Forest. River Forest, I joked with the chairman when we talked back in May that, the reason we didn't move to Hinsdale is because we wanted River Forest. And so we appreciate the work that you guys are doing. The one thing that, in a few months I'll might come back on is we can't get any more Soul Smart. We can't advance in the Soul Start program with that review time. And I know in the course of this conversation, we kind of lumped together the, giving the homeowner direction on status as well as kind of, we lump the two things together, which I understand. And actually that does provide benefit to the homeowner because then they know what decision they make, what implication it has immediately. So I understand that, but, I would love to see a way for us to either decouple them at some point, or try to find a way to speed that up so that we can continue to advance, which is the direction of the board.
If we can come up with anything creative, I am sure we're open to it. I think we're just stuck on the question of, a significant modification, visible to, to a historic property. But if we could figure out some wording or some way to handle this where that would be an exception, I would back that for in a minute.
Yeah, and I think maybe the
thing to do don't give up on us.
Yeah, yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Thank you for saying that. This is evolving, you know. So yeah. I think this is great because we've had a really productive conversation. We all know each other now, and we're going to see more solar come into town. And as it does, I think we'll get back together and see if there's ways we can improve on this or not. Maybe we're there.
And Commissioner Simon, one thing might be continuing to do some analysis between our process and Oak Park's process, because I know that Oak Park is Soul Smart Gold, and so something's working for them to get to that level in conjunction with their HPC. So maybe we can figure out how to draw some more parallels between our ordinance and really get to the bottom of that. For example, how do they handle it if it is on the frontage, you know, and kind of work through some things like that.
So I have kind of two takeaways I've written down. So there's that, John, where I'm happy to provide the HPC with kind of analysis of, because I've already done that work of numerous kind of surrounding communities, you know, just do a delta kind of versus where we're at. And then also something that Commissioner Graham White said earlier, I had already been working on kind of a something that we're going to put on the VRF website under the solar section to really advise residents on what a, for lack of a better way of saying it, like classy way to do solar is, whether it's historic or not, right? Like there's good ways to do it and there's bad ways to do it. And so those kinds of guidelines on how the way people can minimize the impact while still having the benefits is something that we will put up on our website, and I will share with you guys to get any of your feedback as well.
Eric, thanks for your good work and the good work of the Sustainability Commission. One of the things that I would like to sort of state as hopefully a takeaway is one of the events that we have seen very, very typically is that when someone comes in front of us for a COA, particularly with windows, and their comment is, gee, if I'd only known, I've got a basement full of windows that my contractor told me to buy, and now I realize I'm here and I need at least to go in front of your folks with your thoughts. I wish I had your opinions and your suggestions before. If you and the Sustainability Commission, when folks have a historically significant property or an architecturally significant property, and they're considering solar, that they avail themselves, even informationally, with some of the thoughts that the two architects and the other commission members have as various ways to do it in a more sensitive manner, that perhaps is something that would benefit everyone all the way around. Because clearly there's always better and worse ways to do virtually anything. And we're always in favor of things that are cleaner and simpler and more appropriate, and in this instance, more aesthetic.
Well said, Chairman. Yeah, I 100% agree. Well, thanks again. I appreciate everybody's time, and I'll look forward to seeing everybody around town. Do I get off now, John, or how does this work?
Yeah, you're welcome to stay for our next item, but
I'm free to go.
Appreciate your time, Commissioner.
All right, it's like now. Hotel California. You're stuck here, man.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I haven't been a commissioner for 4 years. I know the drill.
Thanks,
Eric. Thanks a lot, everybody.
Thanks, Eric.
Thank you.
Okay, next item, discussion of additional ways to protect significant properties. Does anyone have any additional comments and thoughts? The one thing I'd sort of like to report in terms of some circumstances since we last met, what, in February, is that my wife and I had the opportunity several weeks ago on one of our walks to meet the new owners of the Winslow House. And they have moved in. They preservation architect and very much considers the Winslow House for its great architectural merit. So that's only good news. Secondly, the Women's Club, as we all know, sold, it has closed. It was purchased by a couple originally from this area, had out of state for educational purposes, and has moved back in. And thirdly, I had a meeting with Eric Wagner, who is the head of Visit Oak Park, that is a tourism organization that covers, among other places, River Forest, and gave him some thoughts in pre-COVID days as to various kinds of things that he could put on his website to suggest things of architectural and historic merit in River Forest as a way of ginning up a little tourism activity here. So with that, I open it up for everyone else.
This is Michael, and I think now Commissioner Zager will want to jump in on this, because before COVID, we had several discussions, met for lunch. I think we were on a really good track as to kind of options for housewalk and you know, how to make that into something in River Forest. And, you know, we really had, I thought, Jan, we were making, like, I felt like momentum was building, and then COVID just kicked us in the teeth. But I think the idea of having an event, of making that something, you know, trying to make that something bigger, or potentially expanding it into, you know, like having it with another event, like they do it in Riverside. Yeah, was something that I think Jan and I were starting to have some good ideas on. And obviously in those days, Jan was, you know, kind of giving me her opinions on the basis of having, through the Historical Society, been setting up kind of smaller house walks. But we were talking about ways that we could, I think, you know, that would have resulted in some bigger ideas, something to build on, right? Which, like anything, you build these things over time. So, you know, now we're at a halt, but I think that once we get a little bit to the other side of this, whatever we think that is, I am certain that now Commissioner Sager will just be anxious to jump in and to make that a more joint kind of a thing that we could do here, which I felt very hopeful about. Jan, I don't know if you want to jump in here.
Yeah, so Mike and I had a lunch. I can't remember that date, but it was shortly before the shutdown restaurants were closed down. And I think one of the things that Riverside does is they had a beer fest. And so before the beer fest, they had a house walk, went through maybe 5 or 6 homes in Riverside. Now, that's an ambitious effort, and I think those indoor housewalks are already set. The Historical Society does one every May. That got canceled. Well, it got postponed to who knows when. And then the indoor housewalk, and 1 year it's in River Forest, the next year it's in Oak Park. So that with the Historical Society is every other year. Then the Wright Plus Tour this year, there were going to be 6 or 7 of the total residents were going to be in River Forest. And now that's been pushed to June of, or no, May of 2021. So maybe we could work with the trust, since there is so much time, to promote. I don't know. I mean, all I can tell you is the Wright Plus Tour of all these River Forest homes will be May of 2021. For the Historical Society, one thing we talked about was Mike now knows that the Historical Society also does these sidewalk tours. And so the one that we had set up for Thatcher Edgewood. That's going to be coming up in July. We're going to limit it to 10 people, though, or that's the word so far, because we don't know how receptive people are going to be to being shoved together. And also the presenters, how the presenters feel about standing with a bunch of people. And then we're working on the Keystone, the three blocks between Lake and Chicago Avenue. Another thing that was mentioned is possibly self-guided tours, but that's down the road, and that would be a new thing for the Historical Society, and they are not even sure how that would work. If you would download an app, where would that be a self-guided tour of what we already give in person? Would we do something more like the map that was put together by the commission? So, and then we have the food truck rally. Now, John, we don't know when the food truck rally, if that's going to happen in September. And then what could we do to collaborate with that? That thing starts at, what, 3 or 3:30?
Yeah, sounds right.
So maybe we could do something with our map. Maybe we could, I don't know. But, you know, what Riverside does, where they've got these this morning walk, and you go into the home, and so it goes on and on and on from like 9 to 2, so you get a lot of audience revolving in and out, whereas our sidewalk tours, that's just one group. It's an hour and a half, so you can't just keep revolving. So I think that's what Mike and I were kind of kicking around. We were becoming familiar with the Riverside, but also what is going on right now, what's in place right now in River Forest without reinventing that wheel. You know, we've already got the food truck rally. We always have the house walks.
Just as a note on that, I would say that we're nearing the end of our initial run of the brochures. So if we were going to think about an event where we knew we were going to give them out in a big quantity, we would definitely want to plan on that so we could do a reorder. I know there's one typo in this map, but if there's if there's anything else that anybody wants to suggest we clean up, we could talk about that as well. Unfortunately, the great graphic designer we've worked with on that project is no longer in business. She's taken another job elsewhere, so we don't use her anymore, but we can certainly drum something up and work on that project again.
Well, we're going to have plenty of time because I can't imagine we're going to be doing anything with a housewalk, you know, any time while the weather is good this year, that's for sure.
Just a note to think ahead on. I don't want you guys to scramble one day and be like, send us 1,000 copies because we don't have 1,000 copies. We probably have a couple hundred left. So.
Oh, you're so optimistic.
Just need to take all the homes with solar panels off the list.
Yeah. Oh, now our real colors come out.
all interest. Right. Yes.
I have more, but
please.
People want to jump in on that note about the house walks and, you know, those. That way of promoting.
I would just sum it up to say, I think we're onto something. It's interrupted, like everything is interrupted. But I think as a commission, we could probably start to not feel optimistic, but start to feel that there's something genuine to pursue there that might be able to really forward this. Right. That's how I'll say it.
I have something. So the Wednesday Journal article about the sale of the Women's Club, and that was the May 20th article by Lacey Sikora. And in that article, statements were made about the house by the realtor. and saying that the landmark designation is what killed the house. And the house doesn't have a landmark designation. And at one point he did use the easement. And so he was trying to, this realtor, I think, thinks that because the preservation easement was granted through Landmarks Illinois, that the house is a landmark and it can't be touched. And that's not true, that it can't be touched in certain areas because of these preservation easements that were put on there by some previous owner. And a preservation easement is, we have no purview. It's not in our ordinance. That goes with the title of the property into, my understanding, into perpetuity. I know our village president wasn't happy to see that kind of phrasing that killed the house, the landmark designation. I'm wondering if the commission should put out some kind of statement, or if we should start thinking about an FAQ sheet. What is a preservation easement? What does the HPC have to do with that, which is nothing? What is a landmark? When is a landmark not a landmark? The landmark that we have two landmarks in River Forest, so it's not real complicated here, but the term landmark is used pretty loosely. It's an important property. You know, say that that's a landmark property. But when it comes to us, we have no jurisdiction over what somebody would consider a landmark.
Speaking about the Women's Club, it is my understanding that the Women's Club carries with it two preservation easements, both placed on it in favor of Landmarks Illinois by the most recent former owner who had restored the property. And then precipitated the sale. There is an exterior and there's also an interior preservation easement, is held by Landmarks Illinois, and Landmarks Illinois could choose to modify that if they wish. I think many people that I've spoken with believe that the issue with selling that property was the interior easement, the interior preservation easement. Now, one of the things that I remember is, let's go back to the days when we had the so-called Velas house that was ultimately torn down. And I gave a number of interviews to the press, including to Cranes. And that one of the things that frustrated me in the process is that precise, specific real estate terms, which I had used, were viewed as interchangeable with other real estate terms, such that the resulting article contained a lot of misstatements. And that's just something that unfortunately is an issue with some media, in that rather than repeat the same word in multiple paragraphs in a one-page story, if you can use multiple real estate terms that are sort of almost kind of the same thing, let's use those. And that may have been what happened in the story about Women's Club, because I think, Jan has correctly pointed out, the term landmark was used without really defining it or specifying whether it's something with respect to the village or some other organization or entity. I think that's kind of what happened.
I think sometimes just to leave the whole article alone, not even to reply to it. I think most people don't even think about landmarking and the legal significance that it has in terms of the preservation ordinance.
I do think it's interesting. At one point we talked about reaching out to the realtors of the community. And, you know, maybe this is what ties into that, where we, you know, have a seminar or a talk with the realtors just to try to educate them on these issues.
As a matter of fact, John, I had scheduled a presentation in front of the educational seminar that the Oak Park Board of Realtors gives for realtors who are active in this area. It was scheduled for late September. I know it would shock no one that has been put on hold. It was put on hold 6 months ago into the indefinite future. And when it in fact pops up back again, I will be there. And certainly other commissioners are welcome to join as part of the presentation. But that's something that we had thought of doing several public presentations were done several years ago and to the general community. And this is something we were going to target specifically the local realtor board, and clearly along with a lot of other things, it's been put on an indefinite hold till we all can resume some typical normality.
Yeah, I think that'll be super important once we get back to normal.
Yeah, I would agree.
I have more.
Please.
Another idea, and Dave, you even said it again tonight about windows, and somebody said, oh, I've got these windows in my basement. I wish I would have known. How do people know that they can come to the HPC for an exploratory discussion? I don't know that that's ever really been published. It seems, and also I think, Dave, at a previous HPC meeting, you had said that anybody, any homeowner in River Forest can come to a meeting and ask for some guidance. Is that true?
Well, our jurisdiction is limited to the significant properties,
okay.
we can certainly give advice. But in terms of giving a certificate of authority and our specific jurisdiction, we're limited to the significant properties. John, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think you're spot on. But I was going to say too, you know, we have done various letters in the past. You know, if you wanted to do something to the significant properties, you know, that's a easy mailing list that we have. So there could be a letter written reminding people that they can always come for advice on things. You know, if somebody wanted to craft an FAQ or a letter or something like that, that's an easy thing that I can print and send out to the historic properties. As far as the community as a whole, you know, there's always other avenues. There's always social media and the e-news and the website that get fairly good readership, that if the HPC wants to craft some communication reminding people that they're available for things like that, I think that that's a you know, perfectly good way to do that. And obviously those avenues, the website, social media, and e-news are cost free. So
yeah, I think it would certainly benefit a homeowner in a significant property to do have an exploratory discussion, come to a meeting and say we'd like to, well, and even tonight, what was mentioned about exploratory with the solar panels, and that benefits you know, somebody can come to the Sustainability Commission or to this commission and say, well, we're thinking about this and we're thinking about on this side of the building, and, you know, before they're actually at the permit stage where they need a definite answer, and they can come early and kind of get an idea of, and so this would be for the windows, like Dave, you said, you know, rather than have the basement full of useless windows later on. I don't know how we get that out, as although John said with social media.
I would caution, though, that there's a difference between sort of an informational discussion and someone using getting a piece of advice and then saying, but you told me, and but you told me is based upon an interpretation that perhaps might not align with what the commission thought that it had said. Think the famous Norman Rockwell painting of a phone conversation. There's certainly various ways to get it out. And I know that over the years, I and other commissioners have been approached informally, just walking around the village or waiting for the train or whatever, saying, hey, I got a question. You're a commissioner, right? So just one of the additional benefits, Carly, you didn't know you're signing up for.
For what? Doing an FAQ?
No.
I'm waiting for the train?
Yeah. So, any other thoughts? You have further thoughts, Jim?
No, just throwing them out there.
Good ideas, Jen. Glad you're official.
Thanks.
Any other thoughts, questions, comments?
My last one will just be then the next meeting, if nobody else has anything else. So we'll proceed with our regularly scheduled meeting. I will get some communication out to you guys between now and then. Let me get that date for you guys. It would be July 23rd, the fourth Thursday in July. As of right now, the telephonic meetings are allowed under the governor's state of emergency. That was the amendment made to the Illinois Open Meetings Act, is that when the state's in a state of emergency, telephonic meetings are able to be held. There's some lack of understanding of where that's going to go in the month of July, because the state of emergency is expected to, at this point, lapse at the end of the month, and we're not yet aware that the governor is going to sign an additional state of emergency as we go into July. Long story short, as it stands right now, that meeting would be required to be held in person, and you'd be able to participate telephonically for the normal reasons again, which are work or illness. So more to follow on that. Not quite sure in the general public meeting scheme what's going to happen, or if this will be extended somehow else or however like that, but I'll certainly keep you guys in the loop, and we'll plan on meeting one way or another that night. So.
If there are no other further comments, do I hear a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Wait, you're a second.
Second.
John, do you need to do a formal countdown?
Chairman Franek?
Yes.
Commissioner Pritz? Commissioner Pritz, you're in favor of adjourning, sorry.
Yeah, sorry, I was on mute.
No problem. Commissioner Forehand?
Yes, thank you.
Commissioner Graham White?
Yes.
Commissioner Prestis?
Yes.
Commissioner Sager?
Yes.
Thanks so much, guys. Always appreciate it. Good to see everybody again.
Yeah. Thanks, John.
Thanks.